Good evening and welcome to City Visions. I'm your host, Joseph Pache. Our topic for the hour tonight is bright lights, big cities. Who benefits from billboard deals? Digital billboards, electronic billboards, changeable variable message centers. They're just some of the technical or common names for billboards. They're also being referred to as litter on a stick and the junk mail of the American highway. But to many local governments attracted by the promise of new revenue, they are cash cows. Tonight, City Visions explores Oakland's plans to construct up to 5 digital billboards as part of its billion-dollar development deal to convert its former Army base into a shipping and distribution facility near the foot of the San Francisco-Oakland Bay Bridge. Opponents of the plan cite concerns about driver safety, visual pollution, environmental interests, and the process by which the public airspace is being privatized. Proponents, on the other hand, have claimed that ad revenue will benefit the local community. We'll also pose the following question. Are billboards both a symptom and a cause of urban blight? And how would you feel if you lived nearby one of these proposed billboards? Why can't local governments resist billboard deals, it seems? What about free speech in all of this? And who's getting the bulk or the bilk of the billboard revenue? Joining me tonight in the studio to discuss these questions and more are Jerry Wachtel. He's researcher and consultant both to the billboard industry and to government agencies wrestling with billboard issues. Jerry is an engineering psychologist with 40 years of experience studying human performance in complex tasks, including aerospace, nuclear power plants, and transportation. And he authored the first definitive report about the safety impacts of digital billboards for the U.S. Department of Transportation, and recently performed a comprehensive review of research and policy about such billboards worldwide for the heads of state departments of transportation. He's also served as an expert witness in accident cases, and he has consulted both to the billboard industry and to the government agencies wrestling with billboards. Welcome, Jerry.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
We're also joined here tonight by Karen Hester. She is a community activist and events planner based in Oakland, and she co-founded Make Oakland Beautiful in response to the threat of Oakland putting up new billboards as part of its Army base redevelopment. Welcome, Karen.
Thank you.
And finally in the studio, we're joined by Milo Hanke. He is past president of San Francisco Beautiful and has fought billboard proliferation in San Francisco for the past decade. He helped lead his organization's successful effort to enact Prop G, the No New Billboards Initiative, that passed with a 79% approval rating by voters, a record level, back in 2002. Welcome, Milo.
Thank you.
And finally, by phone, we're joined by Randy Morrison, who's calling in from San Diego. He's an attorney there who specializes in land use that invokes First Amendment and free speech concerns, especially regarding signs and billboards. And he has successfully defended local governments coast to coast when they were sued by billboard companies for denial of billboard permits. He operates the informational website signlaw.com. And prior to becoming an attorney, interestingly enough, he was a radio broadcaster for 18 years and first going on the air at age 14, I am told. Welcome, Randy, to the program.
Thank you very much for the invitation. It's fun to be on the radio again, first time in many, many years.
Excellent, excellent. So, Karen Hester of Make Oakland Beautiful, I wanted to start with you. I kind of outlined why you and others are opposing this plan, but why don't you take us through your arguments?
All right. Well, this deal was passed in June, and with an amazing lack of public scrutiny. This billboard deal was buried in a 900-page document for the Oakland Army base. So besides the fact that it's going to visually pollute our environment for 66 years, which is an amazingly long lease, it's such hubris to think that we know what we're doing for 66 years. The fact is that nobody stood up at that city council meeting and opposed the billboards. And why is that? It's because nobody knew that this was part of the Army base deal. So we're opposing it because we believe that these billboards will... It's a creeping disaster, actually. We have a couple of billboards up in Oakland along 880, and folks can see those from Claremont Canyon. You can see those from AT&T Park. And imagine 5 more of these up along 880, two of them being proposed at this point to be in Gateway Park, which will be the place when this multi-billion-dollar Bay Bridge is finished, the touchdown park. That could be just a crown jewel in Oakland, and instead we're looking at polluting that with billboards, as well as our iconic views of the industrial port.
So how did you find out that this got passed?
Well, I actually found out from Friends of Gateway Park, Leslie Pritchett, who is been in Oakland for just about a year, and she'd been trying to find out for months what was going on with these billboards. And because she'd heard this rumor, and so she went through all the channels that you're supposed to go through. She was getting information from the City of Oakland's chief negotiators for the Oakland Army Port saying, you know, this is being negotiated, this deal's being negotiated, so and even the city attorney said, you know, we can't give you the particulars of the deal. And unfortunately, that was the end of it. There was a severe case of obfuscation. Now, legally, they did notice the meeting in June where they would be voting on it. But again, unless you were really paying attention, and unfortunately, we don't have a lot of Oakland bloggers at this point. The media, unfortunately, did not do their job to alert the Oakland community that this was part of the Oakland Army base deal.
I heard there was something about like 900 pages
exactly.
of the document that came out of these negotiations, and it's hidden somewhere in there.
It is. It's way down in there somewhere.
Perhaps it's overly biased to ask you this question in terms of your take on this, but why do you think it wasn't brought to light?
Well, I think it's pretty obvious. The reasons is because the billboard industry doesn't want folks to know what they're proposing, because most people don't like billboards. And if it was just debated in the light of day, the city council, I think, would have actually, you know, done some deep thinking about this and perhaps been persuaded by people like myself and other people who care about what our visual landscape is going to look like for 66 years. So that's the reason. And it's also the developer, Phil Tagami, and his crew. They did this in 2005 and 2007 with the two billboards that you see up now that are digital billboards. This was a very complicated deal with Jerry Brown. And this was, you know, they make it sound like that it's such critical money and it's going to go for great things. And so they try to make the poison go down easier.
Mm. And so what have you understood to be what the potential benefits of these billboards are going to be? And specifically about the portions of ad revenue that will go to the city of Oakland.
Right.
What have you heard and
well,
what's your assessment of those,
you know,
claims?
And it's not just hearsay now. I mean, we do have a copy of the term sheet that's being negotiated. This is not a done deal because the term sheet has not been signed. So for what this is, it would be five billboards, three of them digital, and the minimum amount of money that the city would make would be $300,000 a year, which is totally chump change. Now, the city negotiators will tell you that it's going to be a lot more than that, and I want Milo to speak to that because he's a financial kind of person. But, you know, this is a significant amount of money that we're going to be getting for the city of Oakland. So that's the way they approach it with the city council. You know, they make us act like we have, you know, the city council has this poverty of vision that Oakland's a poor city, so let's just increase our poverty by blighting our city. And we have a beautiful city, and we're actually, I don't know if you remember last year, but Oakland was voted the fifth most by the New York Times, the place in the world, number five that you should come and visit. And so what are we going to do? Instead, the city council, for their lack of vision, is talking about polluting our beautiful city.
And so tell me more. Why do you think that putting these billboards at the base of the Bay Bridge, how does that constitute blight to you?
Well, you're not going to have a choice whether or not you can look at them if you're driving. You know, these are huge, amazingly large billboards that are going to be night and day shining in your eyes. And so it's not like an ad, you know, or a radio that you could turn off, or a magazine ad. You can't stop from looking at it. And I know Jerry's going to be talking about the driver distraction, the safety issues. But just imagine as you're looking out towards the port, or even if you're looking at Gateway Park, and actually we have some beautiful historical buildings in Gateway Park that are going to be saved. And one of them is the potential is for it to be a transportation museum. We're going to, and bikeways and all kinds of incredible things. Well, imagine, you know, kind of at the bottom of Golden Gate Bridge. I mean, luckily San Francisco has a proposition, but imagine putting up, you know, huge digital billboards there. I mean, would the city of San Francisco stand for it? Hopefully not. Or in Marin, same thing as you came over the Golden Gate Bridge. Well, as you come over the Bay Bridge into Oakland, the first thing that's going to assault you are going to be these LED digital billboards.
And before we move forward with the conversation, I wanted to make sure that we made a note of the fact that we reached out to several entities and individuals to come and support the billboard plan. And unfortunately, we're not able to get any of those people to agree to appear on the program tonight or who did not respond to our calls. And they included several council members in Oakland, Nadel Bruner, and then Mayor Kwan, Oakland City Assistant City Administrator Fred Blackwell, the Oakland Army Base Project Manager Patrick Cashman, and Foster Interstate Media Incorporated, which is contracted to install and operate the boards. So just wanted to make sure we made note of that before we continued on with the conversation. So Karen, you've outlined your concerns. Milo, why don't you bring in the perspective of the city on the other side of that bridge, San Francisco. How are the concerns that Karen brought up similar to concerns that you were dealing with back in 2002?
Thank you. This is very much a repeat of the experiences that we've had in San Francisco and will continue to have in San Francisco as long as there's money to be made in billboards and their insiders to have them installed and privately and magnificently profit from blighting our skies. What was profound in our experience 10 years ago with the passage of Prop G was this is not a right-left issue. We paid for some extensive research before we put it on the ballot. The initiative Prop G says no new billboards, period. And we surveyed for union, non-union, any number of socioeconomic strata was flushed out in the study. And so gratefully, we find that when you ask people, do you want to look at billboards, the answer will always come back no. And indeed, four times we've had billboards on the ballot, and the public has voted no. And one of those ballot initiatives, incidentally, was 3 years ago, where we said, well, what about billboards on public property that could garner revenue for the general fund?
I was just going to ask, because it depends on how you ask the question, right?
Yeah, well, Prop G was only about private property. A separate proposition that was passed in 2009 without any real expenditure on our part, and it passed overwhelmingly, said no new billboards on public property. What our voters were telling us, you can't pay us enough to look at any more of this stuff.
So even if it were to, revenues were to go towards the public good, you're
correct,
saying that what you, from your research, that people are still opposed to billboards?
That is what our voters have said. The answer is yes.
And so I'm not sure how familiar you are with the plans that Oakland has put forth, but what of this notion that, well, okay, but we're going to get some money from this. Why is that a problem?
Well, the people who ask that question and want a good answer, those are the people who are most important in this discussion, because no one is calling into City Hall saying, gee, Oakland would be a much better city if all of us could just look at more billboards. It's the money. But when you find out how little money is involved, you're disgusted. It's an insulting amount of money when you consider the collateral damage to our communities and the economics. It's quack economics. Specifically, I've looked at the details of this money that's going to come to Oakland over trickling in over a 66-year period. It's a minimum of $300,000 or $350,000 a year, which to me individually is a lot of money, but in running the city of Oakland is a minuscule amount of money. I don't think you could run Oakland's government for a day on $350,000. And if you took a single lump sum rather than getting the sprinkle over a 66-year period, you'd be lucky if he came up with $10 or $12 million. And so the question to Oaklanders is, how much is your skyline worth? Hmm. And then you compare that. How much money, Oakland, are you spending on litter control, abatement of graffiti? What's it worth to you? And then something that gets a little more esoteric, but there's a lot of academic press behind it, are the profound implications and effects that billboards have on socioeconomically disadvantaged neighborhoods. Not to be too cheap in this, but the guys that own the billboard companies live in neighborhoods that prohibit billboards.
Hmm. And I have a question. I'm looking at the same document that you have in front of you there that was put together by the organization that is contracted to install and operate the boards. This is Foster Interstate Media Incorporated. And they say that it's going to take about, what, $3.5 million to design and build the structures. Who's putting up the money for that? Do you happen to know?
I believe the vendor is.
Okay. Karen, you agree. Okay.
Could I make a quick thing? The other thing that's wrong with the Foster proposal, it's pie-in-the-sky numbers. It assumes that I think the only number that's relevant is the guaranteed figure. In San Francisco, our Board of Supervisors elected not to renew a billboard contract for one of its buildings because the revenues are one-third of what they were 15 years ago. The economics of the billboard industry are disintegrating.
So why look to billboards?
Some people are making just enough money and have enough of an in at Oakland City Hall that it's still worthwhile to some.
Okay. So I'm really interested in this topic that you raised about the placing of billboards and their effect on socioeconomically disadvantaged neighborhoods. But I want to mark that for coming back to that later, and if I don't, make sure you bring it up again, because I want to bring in some of our other guests. So next I want to go to Jerry Wachtel. He's engineering psychologist with 40 years of experience in many areas of research, but seems to have built a track record in studying this particular issue, the safety impacts of digital billboards for the U.S. Department of Transportation and other government entities. And you've consulted with both sides, so to speak, of the billboard industry and its potential public clients. Thank you. So Jerry, so you're here, let's be clear tonight, not to voice an opinion one side or the other on the billboards, but to start to address some of the questions that have been raised about the safety impact of these billboards. Specifically, how would it impact driver safety? So why don't you take us through your way of thinking about this and the research that you've either conducted or have been able to read about elsewhere that gives us a sense of how to assess that particular concern.
Well, I think the first thing to say is that road safety in the presence of billboards has been studied worldwide for probably 40 years. This is not a new issue. What makes it a new issue is the technology. The new digital billboards are much brighter than the older ones because they're using LED lighting. They can change their message instantaneously. The billboard industry, typically when they seek permits for billboards in local neighborhoods, will seek a 6-second dwell time. That means that every 6 seconds, the message that's on the screen changes to the next message. Research has been done for years in laboratories, in driving simulators, and on the road that demonstrates that drivers are instinctively drawn to these bright, changing messages. They cannot look away. We are sort of wired to pay attention in the periphery of our visual field to things that are bright, that flash, that change, that move, and billboards have all of those characteristics. So studies have shown that they draw our attention, and then it's up to the billboard designer who's creating the ads to keep that attention, and that's what it's all about. Their entire program is to try to capture your attention long enough to sell you their product or their service. The U.S. government, the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, sponsored a study about 5 years ago that has become a kind of a landmark study. It's known as the 100 Car Naturalistic Driving Study. And to try to simplify a very complex study, they got 100 rental cars that were donated to the cause. They equipped each of these cars with very sophisticated computer equipment, video monitors, eye movement cameras. They buried all of this equipment in the car so the drivers didn't see it all the time. And they handed these cars to 100 randomly chosen drivers in the state of Virginia. And they said, here's your car for the next year.
And okay, so not people who rented cars necessarily.
No, not people who rented cars. These were people who signed on for this program.
Okay.
So they had these cars for a year. So for the first week or two, you know, they were aware that they were being monitored and recorded, and so they didn't take that data. But after the first week or two, people just sort of ignored it. And at the end of every day, the computers that were in the trunk of these cars uploaded the data to a central server. And one of the key findings of this study at the end of the year was that when drivers took their eyes off the road for a period of 2 seconds or longer, the risk of an accident shot up by a factor of three. And as a result of that landmark study, traffic safety experts all over the world have sort of adopted what they now call the two-second rule. So the goal when manufacturers now design navigation systems, entertainment systems in the cars, they've got to demonstrate that it takes less than 2 seconds to do whatever the task may be. Mm-hmm. But the billboards have been shown in several different studies now that they take the driver's eyes off the road for 2 seconds and 3 seconds and even longer. And we now know that that 2 second cutoff point seems to be the magic number. The billboard industry knows it, and they simply bury the data. They simply pretend it doesn't exist.
But okay, so that's the experimental data, so to speak, about how drivers are easily distracted because they're hardwired. Then does that translate into data that shows traffic accidents are a result?
There has been a series of traffic accident studies conducted in the U.S., all of which have been conducted by the same company, based in Philadelphia, and all of those studies have been sponsored by the billboard industry. They've paid for the studies. They've guided the research design. Those studies show that there is no relationship between digital billboards and accidents. If you look at studies conducted by state governments, there was one in Wisconsin a few years ago, there was one in Massachusetts a few years prior to that, those studies show that there is a relationship. When you have a digital billboard, the accident rate goes up. There was just a study conducted in Israel on a major highway just outside of Tel Aviv. The Israeli government said, we're going to cover the billboards, the digital billboards, for a period of a year so that we can collect data to see how the accident rates changed. So this was a very well-controlled study. They had billboards present, billboards absent. They were able to compare the roadway where the billboards had been to similar stretches of the roadway. They found significant reductions in crashes when the billboards were covered. When the billboards were uncovered, the crash rate went right back up again.
I want to reintroduce the program. This is City Visions on 91.7 KALW San Francisco and on the web at klw.org. I'm Joseph Pache. And tonight we're discussing Oakland's plans to build up to five digital billboards at the base of the San Francisco-Oakland Bay Bridge in an attempt, Oakland says, to get some revenue as for community development and actually jobs center development, if I'm not mistaken, for Oakland as part of its multi-billion-dollar plan to renovate the Army base there. And so 415-841-4134 is the number to dial if you want to join our conversation tonight and add your questions or concerns about this plan. 415-841-4134, or you can email us at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com, or you can actually post a comment on our Facebook page, 415-841-4134. To stay with you just for one more moment, Jerry, how has this body of evidence that you just succinctly cited for us, how does that impact it, if at all, policy around billboards, whether it's in Wisconsin or Israel, other places that you've cited in your comments?
Yeah, it has impacted policy in a number of countries, sad to say, not in the U.S. One study I did not cite, but was just conducted in Sweden. They erected 12 digital billboards on a trial basis on highways around the capital of Stockholm. They had their in-house government research agency perform a research study, At the end of the research study, the government ordered all 12 billboards to be removed. Australia, which, like the U.S., has several different states, the states in Australia have developed policies, guidelines, regulations that are very comprehensive and very precise as to where billboards can and cannot be located, how big they can be, how bright they can be, where how close to one another they can be, et cetera. We haven't done that in the U.S. at all.
So do you have a sense of if there is such a thing as a safe digital billboard and what the characteristics of those billboards in terms of their placement and other factors are and how it compares to where it's being proposed to be placed here in, at the base of the Bay Bridge?
I have taken the position in everything I've written and in all the talks that I've given that digital billboards can be operated safely. And with all due respect to my colleagues who are more focused on land use and aesthetics, I don't have that expertise. I don't take a position there. But very simply, if you were to reduce the brightness of these digital billboards so they cannot be seen from miles away, if you were to increase the duration of the time that every message remained on the screen, because it is the change of the message, the change of brightness and color that captures the driver's eye. So if you extended that dwell time, so any given driver passing by would likely see only one or at most two messages, the safety issues would tend to fade away. I've proposed this to the billboard industry. They will not budge. They will not change their lighting recommendations. They will not change their dwell time recommendations because it seems that they think that that will reduce their revenue source.
And with Milo's point earlier being that the revenue from billboards these days dwindling, perhaps it would probably erase that return on investment is what might be the effect here. And so anything else that you would add on this topic specifically about things that could be done to mitigate the impact on driver safety?
We know that for the most part, drivers have what we call spare capacity. When you're driving down the road and the weather is good and your car is functioning properly and you're not in a hurry and so on, you can be distracted. You can tolerate some degree of distraction without causing you risk of making an error. There are road conditions, weather conditions, where that margin of error doesn't really exist. Complex intersections and interchanges, hills and curves, places like that that place greater demands on the driver's ability to process everything that's coming in are the places you want to not place billboards. But quite ironically, that's where the billboard companies want to place the billboards, because that's where all the eyes are. That's where they get the most.
Because that's where the attention is being focused.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, thanks so much for that summary. I want to turn next to our guest by the phone. We haven't been ignoring you just because you're not here in the studio. Randy Morrison. He's a San Diego-based attorney who specializes in land uses that invoke the First Amendment and free speech concerns, especially regarding signs and billboards. And you've worked to defend local governments when they've been sued by billboard companies for denial of billboard permits. So, Randy, in thinking about what you've heard so far tonight and your experience in this work, talk through kind of how governments have navigated this area. And let's speak specifically to the free speech argument here. Is there a free speech argument here, and how does it shake out?
Let me give you just a little bit of background. Billboards have been highly controversial with the public basically since they started coming up on the viewscape going back into the very early 1900s. The U.S. Supreme Court has decided only one billboard case that used First Amendment analysis. That was the famous Metro Media versus San Diego case in 1981. It's absolutely a headache-inducing decision. It's over 90 pages long in the law books, five different dueling opinions, but if you boil it all down, you come to three basic rules. Number one, if the city or any other local government wants to ban billboards, they can do it. Number two, The city or the local government cannot prefer commercial speech, regular advertising for goods and services, over what the courts call non-commercial speech. That's classical or core free speech, debate on religion, politics, philosophy, social issues, that kind of stuff. And then the third point that comes out of Metro Media is that the government can't pick and choose favorite topics among the non-commercial speech. Hmm. All right, since that case, there's been many, many, many disputes between billboard companies and local governments, primarily over the issue of when the city says, no, you can't have a permit to build a new billboard. Then the billboard company comes in and says, your sign ordinance is unconstitutional and cannot be enforced. And that's the kind of case I've done many, many times. Now, what's happening in the last few years, especially with local governments all being so severely cash-strapped, is that the billboard companies are doing much less of the First Amendment-type litigation. And instead, they are coming to the local government and saying, let's stop fighting and make money together. And if you will be our landlord, if you'll let us put new digital billboards on city-owned land, here's all the money that will come to you that is brand new revenue that is not tax. And this is a very, very tempting proposition for many, many local legislators. Let me give you some numbers from the Sacramento situation, which has become sort of a test case or an example. Four locations for new digital billboards, all of them on city land, total of seven new display faces, all in the standard size for freeway billboards, which is 14 by 48. The deal has a 25-year term with a 5-year extension option, and I would contrast that with the 66-year term that you're talking about, which is the longest term I've ever heard of in any kind of billboard deal. Back to Sacramento, the signing bonus was $82,500 per location, which brings it to a total of $330,000 just to sign the piece of paper. The total rent going to the city is $720,000 per year as the guaranteed floor or minimum. And then starting in year six, which is probably after the installation cost has been covered, then a possibility of percentage rent kicks in. As part of that deal, the company, which is Clear Channel, also agreed to remove 17 existing billboards. So there was a net reduction in the number and total display area of billboards in the city. In many of these deals, that's one of the key issues. What is the sacrifice rate? What is the takedown rate? And also as part of the authorizing legislation in Sacramento, it says that digital billboards are not allowed on private land, only on city land, which, of course, raises some interesting political issues because the people who have billboards on their land know they could get more rent if it could hold a digital billboard. And so they're saying, going to be saying to the city, how come the city can do this and the private landowners cannot? Then there's one other issue that sometimes comes up in these, and that is restrictions on message content. If the local government is regulating, making laws that apply to everybody, then they cannot really restrict the message content. But when the local government is acting as the landlord and entering into a privately negotiated contract, one of the terms of the deal can be that certain categories of advertising are not allowed. And the typical ones are what you would imagine, sin and sleaze, alcohol, tobacco, adult uses. Sometimes they put in pawn shops. Sometimes they put in things like check cashing stores, things like that. So the big picture is much less litigation and much more deal making because the local governments are so desperate for cash, new cash that is not tax.
Well, thank you for that very broad and informative statement there. I'm going to reintroduce the program, and then we're going to go to a couple of callers, and then we'll be back to our guests to ask some more questions. Again, this is City Visions on 91.7 KALW San Francisco and on the web at KALW.org. I'm Joseph Pache, and tonight we're discussing Oakland's plan to erect up to 5 digital billboards at the Oakland side of the San Francisco Oakland Bay Bridge as part of their $2 billion development deal to convert its former Army base into a shipping and distribution facility at that site. And we are joined by guest Jerry Wachtel, researcher and consultant both to the billboard industry and to government agencies wrestling with billboard issues, specifically an engineering psychologist who has studied this issue and how it impacts driver safety. Milo Hanke, past president of San Francisco Beautiful, who was behind the successful passage of the Prop G, the No New Billboards Initiative, passed in San Francisco in 2002. Karen Hester, who is a community activist and events planner based in Oakland and co-founder of Make Oakland Beautiful. And we were just hearing there from Randy Morrison by phone from San Diego, a San Diego-based attorney who specializes in litigation around billboards and their permitting. 415-841-4134 is the number to dial to join our conversation tonight. Again, 415-841-4134. You can also email us at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com, or you could post a comment on our Facebook page. So let's go to our first caller, Deborah from Oakland. Welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well, thanks.
Good. I work in San Francisco, and I drive every night across the Bay Bridge going back home. First time I saw the billboards, it did kind of distract me because I wasn't expecting it. But as a resident and been living there all my life, I think it's beautiful. I think it's nice. It gives a lot of clarity to the road as you're getting off. And it, when you're at that time, when you're sleepy, you come out, you see something bright. It has an effect, the 880, where the Coliseum is located. And look at Vegas. There's no one driving crazy. You don't hear about a whole bunch of mishaps due to all their signs. Hmm. I think it's nice. We need something to brighten up our city.
Okay. And what do you think about this concern that maybe Oakland's not getting enough money out of this deal?
Well, I don't think Oakland is getting enough money, period, out of anything that they do put there or take away. Every time they put something up, there's something being taken away. But the amount of money that is being put forth for this, I hope it does some good to the city.
Okay, thanks so much, Deborah, for your call.
You're welcome.
Okay. Karen, did you want to respond to Deborah's comments?
Well, I think it's interesting that, I mean, there are some differences of opinion, clearly, but, you know, the people who would live along these billboards, and I do want to make it clear that it's not just the foot of the Bay Bridge. This would swing around on 880 as you're coming towards downtown. And the people who have bought in good faith condos at Pacific Cannery Lofts, we have 90 signatures of people, homeowners there, who are opposing the billboards. Because as you look out into the onto the port, into, again, I call it, you know, we're calling it iconic views of the port and our industrial port, what they would see, right now it's ambient light, and what you would see is exactly what she's talking about. But these are huge, bright digital billboards. Those folks who live there know that this is going to decrease their property value of probably by, you know, tens of thousands of dollars. The developers along West Oakland there don't want these billboards. So it's one thing to drive through them. I think most people, as we've seen in other cities, wouldn't approve of that. But to be living next to them is even worse.
And to you, Jerry, a moment there to comment on Deborah's experience of this, kind of like it's helpful to kind of break the monotony of driving over the bridge at particular times of day when you might be a little tired and a little kind of worn from your day. And that was one point. And the second point was, well, how about places like Las Vegas and Thomas Square? You know, plenty of flashing lights there. Any indication that those places have any higher accident rates?
Well, let me respond to the first question first, and that is that the billboard industry has, over the years, made the argument that these bright, flashing billboards can help drivers stay awake, stay alert, when they are otherwise sleepy, or, you know, it's a cold day out, so you have the heater on in the car and you get a little bit groggy. That's not the case on the Oakland Bay Bridge. Drivers are not able to doze off on the Oakland Bay Bridge, or they would be crashing with or without billboards. And there is something that has been demonstrated not only with billboards but even with police cars that we colloquially call the moth effect. And that is that there are a number of documented cases, quite a few, where a police car has pulled a motorist over and is parked on the shoulder, and the police car has its roof lights, its red and blue lights flashing, and a motorist comes along and crashes into the police car. Hmm. There have been a number of cases. Officers and members of the public who they've pulled over have been killed as a result of these, because the bright light draws the eye of the driver like a moth to the light. And you wouldn't have that here in Oakland because there are so many other bright lights and so much traffic around. But that argument has been shown to sort of nullify the likelihood that a billboard can help keep drivers awake.
And to the second point around places like Las Vegas and I add Times Square.
Las Vegas and Times Square, and I would add to that Sunset Boulevard area in Hollywood. Those are three neighborhoods that have been designated as entertainment districts, billboard districts, the bright lights and big city, which is really the title of this program. Traffic in those areas moves at a crawl. Speed limits in those areas are 20 or 25 miles an hour. I've been to Las Vegas. I've been to Hollywood. I've been to Times Square. It is traffic lights, pedestrians everywhere, and so drivers have more time to look around because they're stopped in traffic. If you had a Las Vegas billboard situation and traffic moved on those roads at 40 or 50 or 60 miles per hour, I think we'd have a real safety problem.
415-841-4134 is the number to call to join our conversation tonight on City Visions here on 91.7 KLW San Francisco or on the web at klw.org. I'm Joseph Pache, and we're joined by Jerry Wachtel there. He was speaking just there. He's an engineering psychologist. Milo Hanke, past president of the San Francisco Beautiful. Karen Hester, co-founder of Make Oakland Beautiful, and by phone from San Diego, San Diego-based attorney Randy Morrison. 415-841-4134 or feedback at cityvisionsradio.com or post a comment on our Facebook page. So, Milo, you want to say something there.
Yes, I just thank Karen for reminding me that not 100% of the public is opposed to billboards. And, in fact, you know, as successful San Francisco Beautiful's Proposition G was, we got 79% voter approval. There's still 21% who said billboards are okay. The point I would make, though, is that there are enough people who have strong enough opinions about billboards that they will pay less money for a house that's located near a billboard. A study by a group in Philadelphia shows that house values drop $30,000. And then also, too, there's the whole aspect of those are economic decisions made at a conscious level regarding the presence of billboards. And also tourism and so forth. Cities that are heavy, regions heavy on tourism, shy away from billboards. Also, there's there are the other consequences that have been studied in I think the study is called Health and Place. Amy Hillier was the lead researcher there. This talks about the health, if not a cause, correlation with health effects of billboards in depressed neighborhoods and neighborhoods that are depressed. It's what came first, chicken or egg, the depression or the billboards, or billboards bringing on the depression. So,
As I said, we're going to get to that. We have a couple of calls and some comments here that I want to get through, and then we're going to get to that point. 415-841-4134 to join our conversation. Let's go now to Greg from San Francisco. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having the show. Basically, I'm on a motorcycle, and once you get off of that bridge, motorists are crazy to figure out where they're going, and I think it's just absolutely ridiculous to think about putting something that would be so distractive to motorists, and, you know, as it is, I always hold my breath there because people are, you know, crisscrossing against five lanes to get, you know, to that upcoming off-ramp, and that's just a horrible location to even think about putting more distractions. And I also think it's going to be horrific, you know, to the eye and to the aesthetics of that whole area. So,
very well. Thanks so much, Greg, for your call.
Thank you.
And we have a comment from Karen in Albany saying that she feels that digital boards are distracting and an awful idea. And then we have an email from someone named Doug who said, I can remember when Serramonte Center in Daly City installed their electronic bulletin boards. Does Caltrans have any idea, any data, on additional accidents caused by this distraction? So, yeah, that's an interesting question. Where's Caltrans in all of this, Jerry?
That's a very interesting question, maybe more interesting than you were bargaining for. a couple of years ago, Caltrans put in a proposal to the Federal Highway Administration in Washington, D.C., requesting permission to add digital billboards to their official highway changeable message warning signs. They had to do this under a research program, but this was when Arnold Schwarzenegger was the governor. The Federal Highway Administration is the regulatory body for pretty much everything on our streets and highways. All of the road signs, the pavement markings, the traffic signals, all of those are set by policy and law by the Federal Highway Administration. And the Federal Highway Administration publishes a book that is used by all states called the Manual of Uniform Traffic Control Devices. That basically means that a red octagonal stop sign is the same in California as it is in every other state. And so the very first, this is a book that's about 500 pages long, the very first regulation in that manual says, highways shall include traffic safety and warning and guidance signs, never billboards. But Caltrans yet put in a proposal because of its financial or its perceived financial gain to erect billboards because the billboard company, in this case Clear Channel, was going to pay the state to erect all these new official highway signs, provided they could run their ads on them when they didn't have to warn of some traffic collision or road closure ahead. The Federal Highway Administration, in its wisdom, convinced Caltrans to withdraw its proposal so that the Federal Highway Administration didn't have to reject it. But I suspect it may come back again.
Very interesting. A lot more than we thought, for sure. So back to you, Milo. Wanted to get to this issue that you raised a couple of times now, which is billboards and where they're placed in proximity to or creating socioeconomically disadvantaged neighborhoods, and then from there, the quality of life and other health impacts. Why don't you go ahead and get a little bit into more about that concern that you have?
Certainly. I think casually all of us can observe that you find billboards in neighborhoods that are depressed and dreary, and it kind of builds into a subliminal message that this isn't a place where you want to set down roots, open a business, or buy a house. And it also has a stigmatizing effect that is cyclical. And there is the fact that billboards are both cause and symptom of urban blight. It sends out a message that invites graffiti, proliferation, and it's always the low-income neighborhoods that are stuck with these billboards. And the billboards are an impediment to economic development. We look in the Bay, you know, it's almost cynical that the joblessness is being used as the shill here for the introduction of more billboards. If this were 10 years ago in the aftermath of 9/11, we might be hearing that billboards care, and this time they care about fighting terrorism. But the lower pockets of the in cities without billboards, you're going to find less unemployment. And with unemployment, you find a whole host of social problems, including health issues. It's a bit esoteric, but it is available on the web. Health in Place, the lead researcher, Amy Hillier, with researchers also from, Amy is from University of Pennsylvania with colleagues from UCLA and University of Texas. And they did find that advertising and marketing does cause consumption. And so young people growing up with an intense amount of advertising encouraging harmful products, heavy in sugar, alcohol, tobacco, they're adapters or early adapters for those products, and then you see correlations with obesity, heart disease, and diabetes. So I don't mean to paint the billboard industry as the antichrist, but I'm having problems saying nice things about them.
And just remind me a little bit of the proximity of these billboards to residential neighborhoods.
I will tell you that several of these are about 600 feet away from Pacific Cannery Lofts. These are condos that are beautiful condos that are along 880.
The socioeconomically disadvantaged neighborhoods you're talking about.
Well, it is, though. I mean, this is the thing. This is West Oakland. This is deep West Oakland. There happens to be this new condo development, but next to there are just lots and lots of folks who've been living in West Oakland a long time. They're also going to be affected.
And are these going to be visible to those residents?
Absolutely. Well, if you go on makeoaklandbeautiful.org, you will see there are architects in Pacific Cannery Lofts who've done an overlay to show, from Pacific Cannery Lofts in particular, where these billboards would be located. What would it look like in a visual perspective? And they put up the billboards so that you could see it from certain units. But all along there, we're talking about Wood Street from 12th to 16th, that whole area, which it's going to be very blighted from there. I live in North Oakland. They wouldn't be putting these up along Highway 24 in North Oakland. I mean, I can assure you. And that's why they're getting away with this, or they think they could get away with this.
One could argue that, the base of the Bay Bridge is quite the sort of funnel that everyone has to pass through. So there's
absolutely.
There's also reason to put it there.
There's a reason to put it there. I mean, they're doing it because we know that 250,000 people are going to pass these, day and night. But I think the point is, that in general, where are billboards dumped? They're going to be dumped in lower socioeconomic neighborhoods, and that's exactly what's being proposed for Oakland.
415-841-4134 or email us at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com in the last 8 or so minutes of our program if you want to make a comment or ask a question. And let's go next to our caller, Brian. Welcome to the program.
Hey, I wanted to find out if there is an accident that's attributed to the billboards, if that would basically just wipe out any gains that the city would, have from the revenues from the, from the billboards, so who would be liable?
I think Brian raises a very good question, and first I would defer to Randy Morrison about who would be liable, but I do want to say that I have seen ads from law firms around the country. Law firms are popping up on the internet asking people to contact them if they have had an accident resulting from a digital billboard.
So, on billboards? Sorry, I couldn't resist.
Thankfully not, at least not yet. But lawyers are beginning to circle this issue and looking for clients who claim to have had an accident as a result of being distracted so that they can go after the company that does the advertising. If the billboard is on public land, that may be a different issue or an additional issue, and I would defer to Randy.
Yeah, Randy, unfortunately, we haven't brought you in as much as I would have liked, but speak to this issue. And then the other part I would ask is any comments you have about when groups of concerned citizens are trying to fight these kinds of issues, any precedent there for a legal strategy?
Well, let's look first at the issue of possible personal injury or personal damage. Now, the lawyers who are in that business, if they have a client that can show some kind of injury or damage, then their automatic way of thinking is, let's sue everybody that's got some money. Okay, so it's going to be maybe the advertiser whose message was distracting, certainly the operator of the billboard, and certainly the landlord, whether it's a local government or not. Then what was the second part of your question?
The second part of the question is, have you seen cases where concerned citizens are trying to fight the erection of billboards, and how do they usually fare in those situations? What kinds of legal arguments do they make or can they make?
It's really not a legal argument so much as it's a political argument. For people who don't like the impending deal, the best thing they can do is get organized and go down to the public hearing and make sure that their elected leaders know that the natives are restless and don't like this idea. Once a billboard is approved and properly permitted and goes into operation legally, under California law, it is essentially there forever. Now, for most kinds of land uses, if the local government decides we don't like this sort of thing anymore, say it might be a slaughterhouse or a quarry or something else that's deemed to be annoying, the normal rule is that it can be amortized out of existence and you just give the owner enough time to recoup their investment. That's the standard common law rule. But in the case of billboards, they were very effective in making enough campaign contributions to get a special law passed in California, which says if the billboard went up legally in the first place, the only way you can get rid of it is either negotiate a relocation agreement to move it to somewhere else or to allow some other replacement sign somewhere else, or else you buy it outright using the condemnation procedure, fair market value, and all of that. Now, I've dealt with a few cities that said, okay, we want that billboard down because it's in the wrong place, so we will buy it. And then they hire a professional to an appraiser to do an appraisal, and when they see the numbers, they faint. They have no idea what kind of money is involved in these billboards. In the kind of billboards you're talking about there in Oakland, my very rough guesstimation would be installing them might cost something in the range of $500,000-$600,000. And if they are successful in the marketplace 2-3 years down the road and the city should decide to buy them out, they're going to be looking at a value of something north of $5 million. And these numbers are just shocking. Most people have no clue what kind of cash flows are involved in the billboard business.
Thanks very much. And Karen, in the last few minutes of our program, where is this debate currently?
Well, the final deal has not been signed. And so what we're encouraging people to do is to go to our website, sign our petition, write letters to their city council people. We are trying to bring it back to the city council. We're trying to find a council member who will do that. There are 4 council seats that are up for grabs right now that people are running for. I think it's very important to put the pressure on our local officials. We're going to try to bring it back through Rules Committee to the Community Economic Development, back to City Council. But if a council member would have the moral courage to stand up and say, you know what, I didn't know what I was signing. I didn't know this was a 66-year lease. I had no idea. That will be the better way to bring it back to the council. Also, we are looking at a possible lawsuit. 2 of the locations look like they may be on state trust lands. We're trying to get that confirmed. And if they are, you probably can't put billboards there. So we're trying to do our due diligence. We need more help. We need more energy. So people should please contact me if they're interested.
And how would people contact you?
That's it. That make beautiful. MakeOaklandBeautiful.org. That has my email address there, and people can sign the petition and get hold of me that way.
Mm. And Jerry, any place where people can learn more about the research, the body of research that you've quoted tonight?
There's a lot of that on my website, which is veridiangroup.com, V-E-R-I-D-I-A-N, group.com. There's also a DVD that has recently been released by folks in Minnesota called The Chronicle of the Billboard Wars, and it's available for $4 or $5, I think, at blightfighters.org.
Okay, great. And we'll have links to these on our website, which is klw.org/program/city-visions. And that's City Visions for this evening. I want to thank our guests, Jerry Wachtel, engineering psychologist, Milo Hanke, former president of San Francisco Beautiful, Karen Hester, community activist and co-founder of Make Oakland Beautiful, and by phone, San Diego attorney Randy Morrison. Thanks all for joining me this evening.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
For a link to this and other City Vision shows, to download podcasts, sign up for alerts, let us know what you thought about tonight's program, or to suggest a program idea, go to kalw.org/programs/city-visions. Our engineer this evening was Eric Jansen. Tonight's show was produced by Lisa Denenmark. Our senior producer is Susie Britton. Join my co-host Lauren Meltzer next week. I'm Joseph Pace. Thanks for listening. Good night and have a great week.